Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, July 22nd. I'm Jordan Pangelinan, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, the Orleans Complex fire hit 17,489 acres, plus a weather update from the National Weather Service. A stolen van crashes and catches fire in Eureka, killing the driver and injuring three. And surveying shows county businesses are definitely struggling. So stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming up. At approximately 11:55 a.m., the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office responded to a report of a missing person near the Eagle Prairie Bridge in Rio Dell. The individual, identified as William Wilburn, 59, was reported to have fled from Rio Dell Volunteer Fire Department personnel as they attempted to provide medical aid. Humboldt County Sheriff's Office, search and rescue, boating units, and drone teams were deployed to assist in the search. As of news time, Mr. Wilburn has been since located safely and is in good health. Emergency personnel are currently providing assistance and the scene will be cleared shortly. The Humboldt County Sheriff's Office thanks the public for their vigilance and support during the response. Anyone with further information can contact the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office at 707-445-7251. Laura Montaña, the public information officer for the Eureka Police Department, shares information regarding the fatal vehicle collision and fire that happened yesterday in the parking lot of a business on the 800 block of Broadway.
On July 21, 2025, at approximately 6:53 p.m., Eureka Police Department patrol officers and Humboldt Bay Fire responded to a fully engulfed van fire in the parking lot of a business in the 800 block of Broadway. Humboldt Bay Fire personnel quickly initiated fire suppression efforts. Unfortunately, the van's driver was found deceased at the scene. Following standard protocols, EPD's Criminal Investigation Unit and Major Fatal Injury Traffic Investigations responded to investigate the incident. Here is a preliminary timeline of events. This is approximate. At 6:46 p.m., Fortuna Police Department contacted EPD's Communication Center to report a stolen vehicle, a New Life service van. At 6:47 p.m., the van's owner informed EPD the vehicle may be entering Eureka, though the information was secondhand. At 6:50 p.m., California Highway Patrol advised EPD the van was speeding northbound on U.S. Highway 101 and may have hit a guardrail. At 6:50 p.m., a witness reported to EPD the van was traveling north on Broadway, driving into oncoming traffic. At 6:51 p.m., EPD received a call reporting a fully engulfed van on fire on the 800 block of Broadway with one person still inside. At 6:53 p.m., an EPD officer arrived on scene and confirmed the van had been involved in a collision and was fully engulfed in flames. These are our initial findings. The stolen van was traveling north on Broadway at a high rate of speed when it veered off the road, jumped the northeast curb at West Grant Street, and continued north along the sidewalk. It entered a parking lot in the 900 block of Broadway, crossed West Washington Street, broke through a fence, and collided into two parked vehicles, one of which was occupied. The impact scattered debris, injuring three pedestrians. The van caught fire upon hitting a curb, then became engulfed, igniting one of the vehicles it struck. A total of 12 vehicles were damaged in the incident. The occupant of the parked vehicle and the injured pedestrians were transported to a local hospital with minor to moderate injuries. The van's driver, a female, was pronounced deceased at the scene.
The Humboldt County Coroner's Office is working to confirm the driver's identity and notify next of kin. Anyone who witnessed the incident or has relevant information is asked to contact EPD's Criminal Investigations Unit at 707-441-4300. Again, that's 707-441-4300. KMUD will continue to update as more information comes. Firefighters had a productive day on the Butler Fire for July 21st as cooler temperatures moderated fire activity, with temperatures in the low 80s and humidity up to 45%. Firefighters were able to construct hand lines more directly on the fire's edge and complete control lines around a number of spot fires and slope overs from the day before. The Butler Fire currently stands at 17,849 acres with a 6% containment, and the Red Fire is currently at 116 acres at an 80% containment. Current personnel on scene is at 1,652. Planning Operations Section Chief Leif Matheson provides an update on the Orleans complex in a news release from the Klamath National Forest's Facebook page, outlining the current status of both fires, today's activities, and plans moving forward.
Good morning, Leif Matheson, Planning Operations with the Orleans Complex. I've got your morning operational update. So starting here in Division Alpha, crews continue to work the left side of this slop over direct from Salmon River Road up towards DP9 and Yellow Jacket Ridge. They've been going direct on that piece of line. They had crews in there making good progress, continue to work that today. Night IR does not show any movement in there, heat on the line, but no movement through the night. So we're going to continue that operation today. As you come around from Yellow Jacket down through that piece of fire that had flanked into Murderer's Gulch, crews were in there yesterday, anchored up from the road, trying to cut that out direct. Again, on the IR from last night, it shows some heat along the line, but it doesn't show significant movement. So crews are going to get back in there and continue that operation. Last night, there's the nose of this ridge that runs down to the forks of the Salmon. You have Salmon River Road, and you have the Sawyer's Bar Road. Crews did some firing around the nose of that ridge to get an even line of fire and back it down towards the road system. They stopped firing just above the road system, about 300 feet, and they're going to let that back down today. So crews will be in there watching that, holding it, potentially doing a little bit of tactical lighting, but for the most part, we'll let that back into the road system. And that should help secure the rest of that line into that road junction. Moving around into Division Golf, crews were able to make access up in towards DP56 last night. And with aerial ignition and a little bit of hand lighting, they were able to bring fire down through DP52 and tie it into the top end of that fire from the previous nights. So this has fire along the ridgeline and a little bit around the corner that had about 500 feet of depth and maybe a little bit more. So that should be something that they'll be holding on today and let that continue to back in into McNeil Creek as that slowly works its way up the hill. So good operation there, a lot of work done. There is still some work to get this back down to the road system and get that held, but a lot of good work on that ridgeline last night. That's been a lot of effort in there picking up these slopovers. There's still some work to pick up those slopovers. There was a spotted over in an old burn into a snag patch, so crews have to work super cautiously through there to make sure they can get in there safely and do that work. Not a lot of changes up here in Division Hotel or Tango. Up towards DP60, things are still backing up there slowly. Not a lot of movement towards the line there. Not a lot of movement towards the line on DP70. Coming around into X-ray, things are holding nicely above Butler Creek and the Butler structures. The spot fire that we had 2 days ago now, they're going to be back in there today, but that had been lined and they're just mopping that up. Coming back around Alpha along the road system back into Nordheimer, things are looking real good.
The Siskiyou County Sheriff's Office expanded its evacuation orders for July 20th, and the Siskiyou Office of Emergency Services has established a dedicated phone number to assist people with their evacuation needs. The number provided is 530-340-3539. Again, that's 530-340-3439. There are zones currently under an evacuation warning where residents are advised to be prepared to evacuate if conditions become more threatening. The latest evacuation information can be found at https://protect.genesis.com. That's protect.genasys.com. Salmon River Road between Butler Flat and Nordheimer Campground remains closed as rocks and burning debris continue to fall onto the road. The Six Rivers and Klamath National Forest issued a joint closure order for July 16th within the vicinity of the Butler Fire. The closures include Nordheimer and Oak Bottom Campgrounds. The Pacific Crest Trail remains outside of the closure area, but hikers are advised to exercise caution. From the National Weather Service, meteorologist James White gives a weather update for July 22nd.
Good morning, everyone. Instant meteorologist James White for your daily weather update. Talking a little bit about the weather that we've seen over the past 24 hours, we did have that marine air yesterday. It moved in, and it made things pretty different than most days on the fire. Humidities were very high. Our relative humidity really struggled to drop much below 60%, even in some of those warmer valleys. Our highs were much lower than normal. They were close to 80%. So it was a relatively, at least for July, cool and moist day around the area. Even had some marine clouds that hung out just out here in the Klamath River Valley, just outside of the kind of Salmon River Valley area. That little break isn't going to last long, however. It's already warming and drying up today much more than it did yesterday. RH is expecting to drop close below 30%. Temperatures back near 90, so very seasonable, normal conditions. Our largest concern, however, is that we do have a threat of some maybe isolated thunderstorms here, most likely over the High Marble Mountains, that could form later this afternoon. Any storms that do form would be mostly dry, so they wouldn't be having very much rain, but they could have lightning, could possibly start new fires in areas of receptive fuel, but also they could have gusty outflow winds that could impact the fire area. Those storms would most likely form to the northeast, though there's potential for them to form really anywhere around the fire, but most likely to the northeast or north of the fire area. So we'll be watching that closely as we go throughout the day today and getting any alerts or warnings out to the fire line to ensure firefighter and public safety as needed. Beyond today, we are looking forward to this thunderstorm pattern kind of continuing through the week. There is potential for thunderstorms pretty much every day through around Friday. The good news is tomorrow, there's a strong signal that although there could be thunderstorms in Northern California, they'd stay far away from our fire area, much further to the east. The threat of some thunderstorms will likely return on Thursday, and so we'll watch that closely as well for any potential new lightning starts or outflow winds. Friday, it gets even more certain, but we'll be watching closely as that threat continues to evolve.
The Six Rivers National Forest implemented a Level 1 fire restriction for July 21st. Restrictions cover a range of potential fire igniting activities, such as building and maintaining campfires in certain areas, smoking and operating spark-causing equipment and other tools. For more information, the forest website is https://www.fs.usda.gov/r05/Six Rivers. You can also find fire preparedness tips at kmud.org under the Fire Resources tab. KMUD will continue to cover the Orleans complex as we get more information. As previously reported on KMUD, a large part of Humboldt County businesses are struggling according to a recent countywide survey. Here is Daniel Mintz with additional details on this story, including how the loss of customers who pay for their goods and services in cash has changed the local business landscape.
Surveying of countywide areas depicts economic struggle, with 6.5% of businesses saying they're at risk of closing. When the focus of surveying narrows to the Eureka Old Town and downtown areas, 39.4% of business owners saying they're struggling, and 9.1% at risk of closing. As described during a July 4th online meeting of the Community Economic Resilience Consortium, the surveying took place during most of April with 214 responses from all areas of the county. A majority of the businesses are considered small scale, with major challenges identified as the rising costs of doing business, decreased sales, and maintaining qualified staff. The Eureka area is particularly concerned about safety issues. Eureka Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Nancy Olson summarized the countywide results. She described the percentage of struggling businesses as indicative of a post-COVID era shift.
So, you know, the happiness is the thriving in the blue, stable in, you know, the 46-47% that are stable, but 42-43% of our businesses said they are struggling or at risk of closing. That's, to me, pretty massive. I had somebody look at that and they said, oh, that's pretty good. And I'm like, we're reading this? Are we in, you know, backwards land or something? 42% of our businesses said that they're struggling. And this is not new. This is not just because of the shift in policies at the federal level. This is the ongoing pandemic, post-pandemic shifts in our reality that have been building over years. So there you have it. Our business community is definitely struggling.
Other takeaways from the countywide surveying include 64% expect increased costs due to changes in federal policy, and 45% are anticipating fewer customers. Amanda Krushke of Eureka Main Street summarized results of the Eureka surveying. As with the countywide surveying, Eureka businesses identified increased costs and decreasing sales as major challenges. And the degree to which Eureka businesses are struggling is similarly alarming.
We have about 51% that are thriving or stable, but we have 48.5% that are struggling or at risk of closing. And that's a really scary number. That's something to be really concerned about. And then the top challenges facing those in the downtown and Old Town area are, number one, increased costs of goods, followed by decreased sales, high rent and operational costs, limited parking and accessibility, and online competition. So the businesses down here are definitely feeling all of those.
Greg Foster, Executive Director of the Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and the meeting's moderator, suggested countywide use of Placer AI location data software to determine where business customers are coming from. Wilfred Franklin of the North Coast Small Business Development Center said having covered places to hold events during winter months would help sustain visitation throughout the year. A significant but unquantified impact on the local economy is the decline of the cannabis industry, as discussed here by Foster and Franklin.
I think we're grasping around for data to try to determine really what is the economic impact of the serious decline in the capital coming in from the cannabis industry. And that can't be diminished really in its impact, although we don't really fully understand it from a quantitative standard. I think we certainly feel it in a qualitative standard.
You can take Libations, who would have people come down in November, December after harvest, and he would make half of his money just in December from people buying champagne with cash. That just doesn't happen for him anymore, right? We all have stories about that in Southern Humboldt, I'm sure too, the store. I mean, it's real. And so that money's not floating around. It's making everything leaner and skinnier.
I mean, we have a lot of empty spaces, even in a place like Ferndale, which you don't think of being as effective, but clearly it was. And I think there's just, we had the whole honeydew petrolia growing region out there, the Loire Valley, if you will, of the cannabis. And I just think it's not coming over the hill nearly as much as it was.
The goal is to do the surveying annually. But with recent conditions described as being volatile, a one-time 6 months follow-up might be done. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In state news, terapia en línea gratuita disponible para estudiantes indocumentados de California. Free online therapy is now available for undocumented students in California. This report is by Suzanne Potter, translated by Tanya Gomez Daza. For English, visit publicnewsservice.org.
Los terapeutas están intensificando sus esfuerzos para ayudar a los estudiantes indocumentados a lidiar con el miedo generalizado generado por las continuas redadas de ICE de la administración Trump. El grupo Immigrant Rising ofrece una línea gratuita de consejería para estudiantes indocumentados en California de entre 18 y 45 años. Mayra Barragán O'Brien es la gerente senior de salud mental de la organización sin fines de lucro Immigrant Rising.
They struggle with the fear of...
Luchan contra el miedo a la separación familiar, ansiedad, dificultades económicas, problemas de pareja y discriminación. Por eso los profesionales de la salud mental les ayudan a encontrar formas de afrontar esos factores de estrés. El programa comenzó durante la primera administración de Trump y hasta la fecha ha brindado cerca de 24,000 horas de terapia a casi 800 estudiantes migrantes indocumentados. Para mayor información, visite immigrantsrising.org/mentalhealthconnector. La fecha límite para solicitar es el 11 de agosto. Barragán O'Brien dice que todos los consejeros son terapeutas con licencia, que tienen experiencia de vida o trabajo con la comunidad indocumentada. Serán conectados con un terapeuta que comprende su experiencia, que no los juzgará, que irá a donde están y que es culturalmente sensible. La mayor parte de la terapia se realiza en inglés, pero algunos terapeutas también hablan español, mandarín o tugalo. Para California News Connection, Tania Gómez Daza. La Fundación Lumina proporcionó apoyo para este informe. Encuentre nuestros indicadores de confianza en publicnewsservice.org.
California presents $10 million state general fund check to California Indian Nations College, KPFA's Scott Baba reports.
Democratic Assemblymember James Ramos, California's first Native American legislator, presented a $10 million check to the California Indian Nations College, or CINC, in Palm Springs. The money, which was sourced from the state's general fund, will support the school's efforts of becoming the only federally accredited tribal college in California and the 34th in the country. Teresa Mike is a board member of CINC. She said the money would be invaluable.
We are coming up on accreditation for California Indian Nations College, and every dollar counts in making sure that we can cross that finish line and help our students to complete their education, not only for themselves, but for their tribes.
According to CINC, California's high school graduation rate for Native Americans is roughly 11% lower than the overall population, and the college bound rates are over 14% lower. CINC's president, Celeste Townsend, said that it is vital that the state prioritizes Native American students.
This moment reflects both a necessity and a promise of a long overdue investment in our Native American and Indigenous communities. This establishment and support of an accredited tribal college in California is not just a symbolic act, it is a transformative step towards inclusivity and cultural integrity.
Assemblymember Ramos said that establishing an accredited tribal college in California is long overdue.
Other states have less Native American population and has as many as three tribal colleges. Here in the state of California, we have the most population, yet we don't even have one. But the state's involvement and with the tribal communities and your tenacity and resiliency of our people, we're going to see it become reality.
The California Indian Nations College is scheduled to complete its accreditation process before the beginning of the school year this September. I'm Scott Baba, Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
In national news, UN gets grim update on Gaza, including average of 28 children killed daily for the last 2 years. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
The situation in Gaza continues to deteriorate. Despite a trickle of fuel allowed into Gaza in recent days, it's not nearly enough for hospitals, ambulances, water infrastructure, and a thirsty population. The UN Security Council heard a grim update today, hearing about a shattered health system amid mass casualty events, 70% of prescription medications out of stock, and up to 5 babies sharing an incubator. Tom Fletcher is UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator.
Mr. President, we are beyond vocabulary to describe conditions in Gaza, so let me instead share facts. Food is running out. Those seeking it risk being shot. People are dying, trying to feed their families. Field hospitals receive dead bodies, and medical workers hear stories firsthand from the injured, day after day after day.
The head of UNICEF, Catherine Russell, told the Security Council an average of 28 children have been killed each day, the equivalent of an entire classroom of children killed every day for nearly 2 years.
Children are not political actors. They do not start conflicts, and they are powerless to stop them. But they suffer greatly, and they wonder why the world has failed them. And make no mistake, we have failed them.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martin.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. After floating the idea of reopening a shuttered federal prison on Alcatraz Island in California, President Trump tasked two of his cabinet members to see it for themselves last week. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, Trump's agenda is at odds with efforts in recent decades to honor the site's indigenous history.
The National Park Service has been stewarding the 22-acre island since 1972, which now attracts more than a million tourists and $60 million in revenue annually. But Interior Secretary Doug Burgum tells Fox News that could all change.
This was part of the Bureau of Federal Prisons, and returning it to that purpose is relatively straightforward compared to a lot of other transactions with federal land.
His predecessor, Deb Haaland, also visited in 2021 to respect the island's past.
Like many of the public lands in the care of the Department of the Interior, these lands tell a story, and you can feel it.
19 Hopi men were imprisoned there in 1895, punished for refusing to send their children to boarding schools. A 19-month occupation occurred 7 decades later. Lenato Warjack of the Shoshone Bannock tribes in Idaho was among them.
We took Alcatraz because it was bringing Indian land back into Indian custody. It meant a lot to me and to a lot of our people.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
The clawback of federal funding to public media could hit rural radio stations especially hard. As the Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel reports, stations big and small are sounding the alarm. And a leader in Native media says tribal stations could be the first to go dark.
KRZA in Alamosa, Colorado, KGLP in Gallup, New Mexico, and KGVA in Harlem, Montana. These are just a few of the stations across the Mountain West that receive up to half of their annual budgets from federal funding. Many more are located on tribal lands, like Idaho's KIYE on the Nez Perce Reservation. Brian Wadsworth is the chief operating officer of Native Public Media, which supports dozens of tribal stations that rely heavily on federal funds.
Some of our stations, they're managed by one person. So to lose funding, you know, we'd see a lot of our stations go dark.
He says these stations are often the only local news source and broadcast critical information like national emergency alerts and extreme weather warnings. That's why South Dakota Republican Senator Mike Rounds says he's secured unused climate funds to direct to dozens of tribal stations. But for now, Wadsworth says they don't have any details regarding how accessible and sustainable that funding would be. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
The National Congress of American Indians says it opposes any effort to revive, quote, racist mascots that demean indigenous communities. The organization is responding to President Trump's call for the professional Washington Commanders football team to revert to its former name, the Washington R-word. In a statement Monday, NCAI said since 1950, its priorities have included eradicating Native-themed mascots. NCAI says Indian country has repeatedly come together to condemn the unsanctioned use of Native mascots, contrary to any assertions by the president that Native Americans want the name back. Trump threatened to restrict a stadium deal for the Washington team if they don't go back to the name. The White House told reporters Monday when questioned about the comments that the president was serious and wants to see the name of that team changed. Trump posted the comments on his social media site Sunday and also said he wants the professional Cleveland Guardians baseball team to revert back to its Native-themed name. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Suzanne Potter, Dania Gomez-Daza, Scott Baba, Christopher Martinez, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org, and now streaming on most podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.